Ask the Pastor with Jim Simmons and Charles Lyons, the program that provides great Bible teaching and the opportunity to ask your questions. Our guests are some of the most fascinating Christians in cinema, writing, and various professional fields. Now, be a part of Ask the Pastor.
Good evening and welcome. This is Charles Lyons, and on behalf of Jim Simmons and the whole Ask the Pastor Now team, we wish you a very merry and blessed Christmas. Please relax, put down the cares of the excitement and perhaps the stresses of the day, and let us begin our time together with God in prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for all you have done and continue to do in our lives. Thank you for so loving us that you sent your Son for us, that greatest demonstration of love. Help us to live, experience, and value the message of Christmas. And please watch over those who defend our nation, their precious families, and all our listeners. In Jesus' name, amen. And now, please listen as Jim and Sonia Simmons share a conversation about a homeless man that Sonia met.
Tell me first, you pulled up to a traffic light, you looked over, and you saw a homeless man with a sign.
Well, I go this way to work every day. I have for almost 13 years. And I don't know how long David had been at that corner before I noticed him. I remember vaguely that there were days that I would see him and rush past and not really give him much thought. And I don't know how long that was that went on. And one day, it was the middle of summer in Houston, so it was scorching hot at, 7:45 in the morning. And I always grab a bottle of water when I leave the house, because I like to drink a certain amount of water, so I have my first one on the way out. And so I got stopped at the light at the corner and reached down to get my cold bottle of water, and out of this corner of my eye, I see this man standing there, not looking at me or, being intrusive in any way, but just standing there and literally melting at 7:45 in the morning. It's so hot outside. He's already sweating profusely, and I go to reach for my cold bottle of water with my cold air blasting me in the face in the car, and I just immediately felt so guilty about it. So I pulled my hand back and didn't drink my water while I was at the corner. I remember thinking, I can't drink this cold water while he's standing next to me. That would just be so rude. So I did that for a couple of days, embarrassingly, for a couple of days. And then finally, maybe the third or fourth day, I thought, well, why don't I just give him my water? That's so rude. I'm about to be at my office in 10 minutes, and there's a refrigerator full of cold water that is free to me. So why wouldn't I just give him this water? So, part of the thought process in my head was, what do I say? Oh, that's going to be so awkward. Well, he really needs this water more than I do. So I rolled down my window that first day, and I handed him my cold water, and he didn't look me in the eye. He looked down at the ground and came over to me, and he took the bottled water, and he said, thank you, thank you, thank you, but he never looked at me, and it just broke my heart. The light turned green. I went to work. The next day, the same thing. I pull up to the light. I thought, oh, I still only have one bottle of water. So I roll down the window and I give it to him. And this time he comes over and he lifts his head a little bit and says, thank you. but he doesn't quite look me in the eye. And the next day, I thought, oh yeah, I'm going to see that guy again today, I bet you. So I grabbed two bottles of water on my way out. And when I saw him at the corner, I rolled down the window and handed it to him. And this time I'm making a point also to look him in the eye because I was just heartbroken at how dejected he seemed. And, you know, I wanted him to know that it wasn't just about the water, but that he was important. So I made sure to look for his eyes. And on about the third day, he looked at me and said thank you, and I told him he was welcome, and you know, have a good day. So this went on for about a week before I asked him his name, and he was surprised that I asked him anything, and but he told me his name was David, and you know, I was just kind of making it up as I was going along. Okay, I can say something else to him besides you're welcome, besides have a good day. But I forgot to tell him my name, so I asked him his name, but I forgot to tell him my name. So the next day, I had to tell him my name, and that's really how it went. Every single day, it was just a little bit more. And you know, that's how we started to get to know each other.
Okay. And so later, it developed, you started giving him a banana. You were trying to give him some food also, and so there was bananas and fruit cups. And how did that evolve to, you know, developing such a friendship and then asking him if he would be interested in, you know, doing more than had been done before?
Well, this was really a long process. I've known David now for probably about a year and a half, and it literally was just baby steps, because I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't know what to say to him, and I didn't know what kind of questions to ask. I didn't want to be intrusive.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be bossy. So it literally was just one teeny tiny seed every day. But I do remember distinctly going to the grocery store after a week or two, getting to know him, realizing, you know, once I saw him, I saw his eyes, I saw his face, and not just this shadow next to me, and I realized he didn't have any teeth on the top of his mouth. So I distinctly remember being at the grocery store on Sunday and getting groceries for the week and thinking, oh, what about that guy? What about David on the corner? What could I take for him that he could eat?
Right.
And then every weekend when we did our grocery shopping, we planned for David as well. Even if it was just one thing a day, it was for a long time just a banana a day. And when I handed him that first banana, at this point we're friendly with one another, but you know, we don't know really anything about each other, but I handed him the banana and he said, thank you. And I remember saying, oh, do you like bananas? I don't even know if you like bananas. And he said, I do like bananas, but I'll take whatever you've got. So it just grew a little bit at a time. And interestingly, over maybe about a year or so, it became, hi, it's so good to see you. And if he wasn't at his corner, which is very unusual, he is very prompt and very diligent. So if he wasn't there for a while, I'd say, hey, I missed you. Where have you been? Are you okay? I was worried about you. And if he didn't see me, he would say, I didn't see you yesterday. So we just really started thinking about each other a lot.
Now at this point, he began to recognize your car.
Yes.
Did it seem like he was excited to see you in the morning? And then from that, y'all began to trust each other. So how did you get him into the next phase, which would be, I think, the temporary housing? How did that come about?
Well, we went to through this banana phase, and then it became a sack lunch
phase. Now,
wait
a minute. It's called the banana phase?
Yeah, that was the banana phase. That was the banana phase.
Good.
It was the water phase and the banana phase and the sack lunch phase.
Yeah.
As you know, the items in the lunch sack grew to, you know, a bar.
And the scripture, didn't you?
Yes.
Daily scripture?
So first I'm giving him a couple of items a day, and then it was too much to carry, so I started buying brown lunch sacks. Then I thought, well, I don't want to give him a plain lunch sack. So every weekend I would take out my Bible and find scriptures, and I would put them in, you know, big colorful markers and draw pictures. And so then for a long time, he got a sack lunch every day with a scripture on the side of it, and he loved them. And he would tell me all the time how much he loved the scriptures, and sometimes I would see him in my rearview mirror. I would give him the sack, and I would pull forward. You know, we would say hello out in our little niceties, and I would pull forward, and I'd look in my rearview mirror, and I would see him read the scripture and cry. And I would just, oh my gosh, it just broke my heart. But God was really touching him and moving in his life and through those bags. And anyway, so I said something to him one day about, I'm sorry, I saw him on a weekend and I wasn't prepared for him or something, and I apologized for not having his stuff with me. And he said, you know what? Of all the things you give me, he says, and I appreciate everything you give me, but what means the most to me are what you say on those bags.
The scripture. Okay.
So, anyway, during the bag phase... During
yes.
the bag phase, which lasted a good long time, couple of months,
mm-hmm.
3 or 4 months maybe, and the Chevron where he stands at the corner was demolished and rebuilt. During this rebuilding phase, there was a construction worker, I guess. I don't know if he was a foreman or what, but he would see me every day, pull up, I'd give a little tap on my horn, David comes running over, I give him my bag, I would hold his hand. I forgot, somewhere in the banana phase, I started telling him I loved him. I just said, David, you matter. You matter. You are important. And you are, you know, I love you. And he would cry, and then I would cry. But anyway, so this construction worker guy, foreman guy, whoever, would see me day after day. And David and I just have this great rapport at this point. And I gave David his bag. I rolled up my window, and I'm waiting for the light to turn green, and I see something out of the corner of my eye. So, and I thought it was David. So I look back, and it's this man. And he's staring straight at me with a really mean look on his face. And I rolled down my window because I don't know what he wants. And he points his finger straight at me. And he says, you are the reason this man won't do something with his life. And then he said something about giving him money. Because you give him money, this man won't do anything with his life. And I was shocked. And I just said, I don't give him money. I mean, of all the things I could have said, I just said, I don't give him money.
You started defending yourself.
Yeah. I said, I've never given him money. That's not what I give him, you know. And then thankfully the light turned green and I drove off because I was getting angry and defensive. And but I tell you what, that really changed things because it made me really start to think about, okay, I'm helping David by giving him food daily. But is that really helping him? He could go anywhere and eat. There are lots of soup kitchens. There are places he could be fed. But am I doing enough? Am I doing enough? What else could I be doing? And I prayed about it. Lord, please help me to know there's got to be more to this. There's got to be more than just giving him a little bit of food that's going to be gone at the end of the day. What else is there? What else is there? I don't know. There's got to be more. And I was so perplexed. And finally, one day I pull up, next to him, and I'm thinking about it, and I just, I'm not one of those people who can say, I heard God's voice. I wish I could say that, but I can't. I mean, I can look back and say, I think that was God, you know,
yeah,
directing me, or whatever. But in that moment, I felt like God said, hey, dummy, why don't you just ask him? And so
what did you ask him?
Well,
you
so I rolled down
straight
the
question,
yeah,
to
him? I rolled down my window to give him his bag, and we do our normal niceties, and I said, David, I feel like I should be doing more for you, but I don't know what else to do for you. How can I help you? What do you want? What do you need? I can feed you every day, but there's got to be more. What do you want?
What did he say? That's intriguing. What did he say?
He said, I want a job.
And that surprised you?
He said, I want to work. I was shocked. Yeah, I said, you do? Do you really? You want a job? And he's like, yes, I don't want to be out here begging every day. He said, I want a job. I want to work. And I was like, well, we can work on that. I'll be back. And then the light turns green. I said, we're going to make a plan. We're going to make a plan. And I went to work, and he was excited, and I was excited. And I started trying to help him find work. You know, I started looking at, looking online for work for the homeless and, you know, the homeless agencies and all kinds of things. But it is really not easy to find a homeless person a job.
So was it at that point you decided that there may be some way to get him off the street into some kind of housing?
Nope, not yet. Not yet. I hadn't gotten to that point yet. At this point, I'm thinking, the man wants a job. Let's get him a job. A job will fix his life.
All right.
A job will help him take care of himself and pay for rent and, you know, be independent. And I thought a job was the answer. And I started calling everybody I could think of. I even, one morning on my way to work, I went early. And I saw David, and I asked him to come back around. At this point, I still didn't know him well enough to let him in the car with me. I just didn't know anything about his history, and I didn't feel like that was safe. So there's a McDonald's just, you know, walking distance around. So I asked him to go to the McDonald's, and I would meet him there. And so I made a U-turn and went back around, and we met at McDonald's. And I had a notepad with me, and we sat down, and I bought him some breakfast. And I said, let's talk about getting you a job. What kind of work can you do? And then he told me his work history. He has a very good work history.
How long had it been since he had a job? Do you remember?
You know, he said just a few years, but the more I know David, I'm not sure that he really remembers time,
okay,
the way, accurately.
So what was the next step? Where did you, you took some information?
So at this point, I'm asking him to go, I'm calling the homeless agencies, setting up what I believe are appointments for him to go in and see people, and I'm sending him on foot, day after day, go here, see this person, go here, see this person. Day after day, he is turned away. We can't help you. You're not in the right place for this. And it's just one disappointment after another. And I really was becoming very angry that it was so hard. These organizations that are set up to help people like him were not helping him. And I still wish I knew more about that system, and I will, you know, will learn more about that system and who do they help, because they weren't helping him, and why didn't he fit what they do? But eventually, in my frustration, I went to Facebook and I asked. We have two really great neighborhoods side by side here that all filter out through this same sort of channel to get to the freeway. And so I went to Facebook and I posted a picture of him and I said, "This is David. He wants to work. Who can give him a job?" Basically, is what I said.
What kind of response did you get?
Overwhelming.
Really?
Overwhelming response. Everybody knows him. Everybody in these neighborhoods. Oh, I've seen him for years. Some people said they've seen him for 12 years. Some people said that he's watched their children go from kindergarten to high school. And I'm thinking, seriously, has he been there that long and I haven't seen him? How awful am I? But I don't know how long he's been there. I don't think he knows how long he's been there.
So you get him to a place called Harmony House.
So
how did that happen?
So the power of social media.
Mm-hmm.
In these beginning stages, and people are all clamoring to help him.
As a matter of fact, someone offered and, in fact, initiated a GoFundMe account, correct?
Yes. Some people, which I totally understand, it's...
Throw money at it.
I want to help, and here's how I can help. Here's some money.
Yeah.
Well, what am I going to do with that?
Yeah.
I mean, thank you. I'm not,
no personal involvement. Here's some money.
Right.
God bless him.
Right.
Yeah.
And people are saying, just get him an apartment. Well, you know, it's not that easy to just go get an apartment.
Deposit, history, etc.
Financial liability that I can't afford if he were to destroy the place or mm-hmm. burn it down. I can't afford that kind of responsibility. So I couldn't just go rent him an apartment. And he certainly couldn't get one in his own name because he doesn't have a job and he doesn't have any credit. Or maybe he does and it's probably terrible. But people really wanted to give money. So a neighbor did start a GoFundMe page that has been very helpful. But we weren't really sure in the beginning stages how it would be used. So back to that in a moment. But one of my childhood friends saw my posts about David, and she lives in New York now. But she sent me a note and said, "You need to talk to Meg at Harmony House." Huh. And she says, you know, they went to business school together. She's the CEO. I think she can help. So I immediately called Meg and explained David's story. And she said, "Where is he now? Tell him to come see me." And that night, he was in temporary housing.
Wow.
Funded by the GoFundMe page.
Wow.
Yes.
All right. So from there now, that's we actually got him a bicycle. We fixed an old bicycle that I had, and
yeah.
We got him some transportation, and came over and fixed a couple of flats, met some other homeless people there. So take us to the next step. After this, how did you get him into a permanent housing? And along the way, we introduced him to a friend at a restaurant. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Meg... And the people at Harmony House, but Meg has really been my direct contact,
mm-hmm.
Has taught me so much about the system and about what a homeless person needs. And it was through this process that I was able to really understand how difficult and nearly impossible it is for a homeless person to hold a job. You're not sleeping, you're not bathing, you're not brushing your teeth, you're not eating well, you don't have a clock, you don't have an alarm.
And there's security also. You're not comfortable.
Right. His first night in Harmony House, when I saw him the next day, I cannot tell you how overwhelming it was for both of us. I mean, I pulled out, stopped my car, jumped out of the car to see him. How was it? What happened? And he said, with tears, he said, I don't know the last time I slept without being afraid for my safety. You know, I mean, it was just so eye-opening. I've just learned so much from him. You know, we see people and we think we have the easy answers. Just get a job. It's just not that easy.
Would he have been in temporary housing without an advocate?
No.
Okay, so.
No. He needed a sponsor. He would not have been able to stay at Harmony House without a sponsor, and that's what we were able to do for him with the GoFundMe funds. And from there, because he wasn't really a perfect fit for the kind of people who live at Harmony House, whether temporarily or permanently, but Meg and her team did a lot of work and a lot of research. You know, they're good at what they do, and they can sort of get a feeling about, does this person maybe have some sort of underlying disability that they either aren't comfortable talking about or maybe don't even realize? Or, you know, one of the things that Meg said, the reason that David was able to go into what is called PSH, permanent supportive housing, is because he was chronically homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a number of people who had to sign documentation that we knew that he had been homeless for over a year. And we had to give dates. And it was this social media, it was Facebook pulling all these people together who knew David to get that paperwork done. I don't know how somebody who doesn't have his resources at that time does something like that. I mean, it's obviously possible, but it's really difficult.
Well, just as an aside, for those of you who are listening to this, you can actually go to Facebook and look at David's journey, correct?
Yes. If you look in the search bar, if you put it in the search bar, because there are several David's journeys, but his specifically... the Facebook address or something is David's Journey 77007.
That's our zip code for that area.
Right. So that one will take you directly to him.
Okay. Take us now, this to me is the exciting part, to the permanent housing and then ultimately our shopping spree, the pictures that they'll see on the Facebook page. Tell us about how we got over there. And then how we were recruited. Actually, she volunteered. You and I and this lady in the other neighborhood went grocery shopping.
Yeah. Well, even before that, even before the GoFundMe page, but after the Facebook page, it was from the Facebook page, one of the neighbors in the adjoining neighborhood said, I want to take him shopping. And we arranged it. And coordinating things with David is difficult because... the only way you can talk to him is if you go to the corner. And if he's there at that time, there's no telephone, there's no home phone. It's all done on the corner. So one of the neighbors took him shopping while he was still living on the street. And so I don't think those clothes lasted very long. You know, he didn't wash clothes. He just wear them and get rid of them and find something else. But so yes, once we got him into Harmony House, and then Harmony House, it took a month, a little more than a month, for them to get him qualified for the permanent supportive housing. And oh my gosh, that was an incredible day. And I wasn't able to be there, but I'm so thankful they sent pictures, which are also on his Facebook page, of him signing the lease to his new apartment. It's a little efficiency, one bed, a kitchenette and a toilet.
And surprisingly, I was pleasantly surprised, it's a nice place.
It is nice.
And it's got rules and security.
Yes.
And
you
it's have to come
apartment.
In and sign in. So then you arrange to have us take him to the Walmart, which is fortunately maybe 500-600 yards or 5 or 6 football fields from there, certainly within walking distance. So we pick David up, the four of us go to Walmart. Tell us about the onslaught of the team going through Walmart, clothes, food, and I can't wait for you to tell them exactly what happened when we got to the ice cream aisle.
Oh, gosh.
Remember that?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, Harmony House did an amazing job getting him set up in his apartment. They had his bedding for him. They had all of any dishes that he would need, but it's for one person. It's not a lot of stuff, but everything he would need. But he still needed groceries and, you know, just personal items to make the place feel like his own.
Well, shower curtain. You
shower
had to get
curtain.
Him a shower
yeah,
curtain.
Yeah, he needed a shower curtain.
Things in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So we coordinated, and as Jim said, it was me and Jim and one of our neighbors through the Facebook page, who we met through the Facebook page, who really wanted to help, named Elizabeth. And the three of us went and picked David up, and we took him to Walmart, and we started at one end of the store and looked through all the housewares. We went, it was so funny. We would say, well, David, well, what do you think about shower curtain? What color shower curtain do you want? And he would just look at me confused, like, do you think I care what color shower curtain I have? And so finally he just chuckled. He's just such a sweet man and so good natured. He just laughs and he just goes with the flow. And he finally said, you know what? I'm going to let you two ladies decide. I'm just going to, whatever you pick is fine. So Elizabeth and I took off and went through all the kitchen stuff, all the bathroom stuff. Just tell us your favorite color. Look at all of these. Which one do you like? He did pick blue. So his bathroom is blue. But we picked all of the pieces. And then from there, we went to clothes. And we bought him several pairs of pants, several pairs of shoes, several shirts. Because now he can wash them. And now he has a place to hang them up and to keep them. And saved the groceries for last. We had to get a separate cart for the groceries. We ended up with 2 overflowing carts full of stuff. And now David has some opinions in the grocery side.
Right.
And he knew what he liked, and we let him just get whatever he wanted. And he was adamant that he could not leave without the ice cream. By the time we got to the ice cream, the basket was already overflowing, and Elizabeth was afraid we weren't going to have room. And he was like, well, I'll put something else back, but I need the ice cream. No, keep it all. We'll make it work. Get
so
the ice cream.
I don't recall the amount, but you probably do, how much was spent out of the GoFundMe account. You're keeping a complete tally and record of everything so that nobody can question where the money is.
Absolutely.
And where. But then the challenge after all of this, and it was so much fun. We're cutting up with him.
We really got to know him.
It's like a child at Christmas. We were just enjoying. This is a man that hasn't had any abundance and hasn't had essentials.
Right.
And now here he is furnishing his own place, filling his own cupboard and refrigerator. Then the fun began after you paid for it. We're walking across there, and then we realize, how are we going to get all of this in one car with 4 people?
It was
interesting. What did we do? What happened?
Well, we loaded up. Oh, my gosh. We did some strategic puzzling of
never
the groceries.
Never seen that much in one trunk before.
The trunk was completely full, packed to the gills, and we each had bags on our laps and at our feet. In the front seat and the back seat.
Had to pull the front seats all the way up to the dashboard to get everything in.
But we made it.
And we made it back and had, how many, 10 trips back from the car up to the apartment. It's, by the way, on the second floor. And
oh, my gosh. And we must have, 10, 15 trips at least.
Yeah, and the view is, just to give you an idea, it's on the Gulf Freeway, 45 North on south side of town. And we can see downtown Houston from his balcony.
What I want to point out, though, especially because the majority of the people who've responded to David's page and really wanted to make the effort to get to know him, and I'm not, there have been a couple of men who have reached out, but predominantly it's women. And what I want to say to women is, this time that we're talking about, when we first moved him in to the apartment and got his groceries, when you were with me and Elizabeth was with me, that was the first time he had ever been in my car.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I had known him, and you know, I would sit and talk to him at McDonald's, I did not offer to take him places.
Mm-hmm.
I just did not know him well enough to know that that was safe.
Right.
And I think that's very important for women to keep in mind. We want to do the right thing. We want to help. But you have to be cognizant of your own safety.
Now, by this time, we have met his brother.
Yes.
And his nephew.
Mm-hmm.
His brother has a pretty prominent job at one of the universities here in Houston. And they have had, I guess, a strained relationship that's improving now. And so as we met the family, as we progressed further with David, his permanent housing and transportation, you got him a cell phone.
And, I did.
And opened up a whole new area for him.
Life was much easier when he had his cell phone. I love David to pieces, but he's not the most responsible person. He's not used to keeping up with things. So he loses stuff pretty quickly. Loses, gets stolen, whatever. Whatever the case may be. So he did have a cell phone for right at a month. It was a 30-day plan, and then the phone got lost. And
mm-hmm.
So he's been without it. But that, oh my gosh. Well, and that's the other thing, going back to finding a job. How do you find a job when you don't have a phone to make appointments for interviews?
Or to get called back.
Or exactly. There's no way to communicate. They're not going to go to the corner and look for you and ask you to come in for a job interview.
One of the things I remember after our shopping trip, and he asked me to lead us in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it just so happened, if I remember, this was a Friday night, so it was about time for Blog Talk Radio's Ask the Pastor Now show to come on. And as things turned out, when we tuned in, it happened to be prayer time. We were, Pastor Charles always asked us to start the right way by prayer. And the prayer just happened to be, and when I say just happened to be, we know whose hand is on this.
It was perfect.
The prayer addressed exactly, he started crying. And when he started crying, I started crying, and you cried. And
Elizabeth cried.
We all cried because God spoke to him through this prayer in front of us. It was a perfect fit. And just everything David says is, it's Jesus. It's Jesus doing this. And he has a palpable sense of Jesus in everything that's going on, which makes us even more grateful for the friendship of knowing David. So tell us now, David and his brother are leaving, I think, over two nights for Christmas in California at some relatives. Tell us about how that evolved.
David has always been in contact with his brother, his younger brother, and then the brother has been in contact with the uh, the only other living sibling is their older sister. I don't think David and the sister have been in contact with one another for a while, but he, you know, they all still stay connected. And for people who might wonder, well, if he's got a brother who lives there, why in the world would he be on the street? Well, his brother explained to us that he said, you know, I love my brother, and he used to live with me, and he made choices that were not allowed in my house.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, I have children, and there are just rules that he could not abide by, and he could not live with me anymore.
Yeah, my house, my rules, and David's bit of a free spirit.
Yeah, well, and David's a grown man, too. I mean, I remember telling his brother, because I felt like his brother was hurt by the fact that David wouldn't just follow the rules and live there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying, my daughter's 25. She doesn't want to live with me either.
Right.
You know, I mean, why are we confused about this? He's a grown man. He wants to come and go as he chooses. He doesn't want to answer to you. Don't get your feelings hurt over that. And if that's his choice to live on the street because he can do as he pleases, then that is his choice.
So what are your hopes for this Christmas trip in California with his family? What are you expecting to happen? What are your concerns? And what happens when he comes back? What's next?
You know, what I would love to see is David's relationship with his sister restored. I think, I certainly don't know the whole story, but I believe that they share a little bit of the same history of, you know, poor choices.
Mm-hmm.
But she has overcome she has overcome the addictions that maybe has taken David a little longer to come to grips with, and I would love to see that relationship restored. And what I worry about is that I feel like David holds on to past hurts. And mm-hmm. we talked a good deal about that a day or two ago when I saw him on Sunday, when I accidentally saw him. There's no accident. David had this really amazing surgery on his jaw recently. We forgot about the surgery. And he's got this huge, monstrous contraption sticking out of his face to hold his jaw in place. And I was very concerned about him because he has no phone.
That was to repair a broken jaw or something that's been untreated for years, right? And
yeah.
This is a, like, had to have his mouth wired, and he's in a hospital that he got tremendous care and people that really helped him during that stay, right?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. He couldn't say enough great things about the hospital and the people there.
Ben Taub,
mm-hmm. absolutely. And his nurses at Ben Taub, he just said, were amazing. And he even talked to them about his anxieties about going to San Diego and seeing his family. And they would pray with him and, you know, tell him scripture and tell him to just trust God. And they really, really helped him in so many ways, not just physically, but...
You gave him a Bible too, didn't you?
Yes, Elizabeth bought him the most beautiful Bible, and she had his name inscribed on it, and he...
What did he say?
Oh, he cried.
Yeah?
He cried. He loved it. And he would tell me for a long time, even after he was housed, he would go back to the corner because that was his job. That was how he got money, and that's where he would see his friends. He considered all these people who stopped and talked to him every day his friends, and he still does.
So, has he talked about going to Ecclesia, the church?
He went to church with one of the with another woman from the neighborhood who wanted to step in and help. He's been to church with her. But, so after the surgery, I was concerned because he was going back home where
nobody
he lived
to take
alone.
Care of him.
Nobody, I know. If I have come out of a surgery. I need for you to bring me my meal.
You're expecting me to serve you.
And my pain medicine.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I'm just picturing David
helpless.
Being home alone. He has to get up and prepare his food, which he doesn't do well to begin with. He has to keep, you know, track of the time for his medicine. He has to be sure he doesn't roll the wrong way when he sleeps on this thing. You know, my mom brain kicked in, and I am just worried about every possible thing that could go wrong. And mm-hmm. he has no phone to call 911 or to call me or to call anybody. And so Sunday morning was the first chance I had to get out to his apartment. And I got out there and I signed in at the lobby and I told the lady who I was going to see. And she said, "Oh, well, I don't think he's there. I saw him leave this morning." I said, "Leave? Did he leave with someone or was he on foot?" And she said, "No, he was on foot." Because he doesn't have a car or a bike. He walks and he takes the buses. So I thought, well, look at me worrying like a crazy lady. I said, I'll go check anyway. So I go over to his door. Sure enough, he's not there. And I get back in the car and I'm like, oh, well, I need to run some errands anyway. I'll go to this store. So I'm going to go a different way home. So I went to stop by Arnie's. For party supplies, and they're closed, and they open at 11. I thought, well, shoot, I guess I'll have to come back. Well, I don't want to turn back around and go back to the freeway, so I'm just going to come this way. Let's see where this street takes me. Oh, look, I ended up right on Washington. That's right down the street from the house. That's perfect. So I turn the corner onto Washington, and there sits David.
What?
At the bus stop with this. And the reason I spotted him, I would have gone right past him, but was the contraption sticking out of his face. And I went, oh my goodness. And so I made a quick U-ey, tapped my horn, and he looks at me, and I pointed him from across the four-lane road, and he pops his head up, and he jumps up out of his seat, and I came around to the parking lot, and he hops in the car, and I said, "What are you doing? Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to my spot." And I said, "All right."
He's going to work a few days after surgery.
He was going to his spot
with a big
the corner.
Contraption that holds his jaw
yes.
in place until it heals.
Yes.
Stuck through his skin.
Oh, yes.
And he's now. You know, for effect, that's probably got to help his sales.
I thought that too. I was like, "Ooh, he was going to get some good money today."
People are going to feel sorry for him.
David. But again, my mom brain, when he gets in the car and I'm talking to him, he is very clearly on his pain medicine and does not need to be taking public transportation or walking miles to get to where he's going. So,
but that's the life he knows.
But that's the life he knows. And he's not a pampered, you know, little thing like me with a wonderful husband who brings me dinner and and pain medicine when I need it.
That was a free commercial. Okay.
So I did certainly, you know, come to the realization that he's used to taking care of himself. He is not, he wouldn't even consider having somebody wait on him and do those things for him.
Okay, so because we, you know, don't have a lot of time left, can you tell me if you were talking with someone that would like to do more, mm-hmm. I know that you would certainly caution them. There's a lot to be concerned with, especially by themselves. But if they wanted to do something like this, where would they start and what can you help them with to get started? In less than 2 minutes.
Well, that I'm not really sure how to answer that question. I would say if you want to help with the homeless population, the safest bet would be find one in your area that you believe in, that you trust, and volunteer there, get to know the system. If there's a specific person that you see on a daily basis, speak to them. Bring them something that you think they might need or be able to use.
And be cautious.
Absolutely. I would not let anybody in my car or anything like that. Can you take me somewhere? No, I'm sorry, I can't. I'm, you know, in a rush.
Right.
But I would, you know, it just was such a long process between David and I. I don't know that that is a question that can be answered if you're talking about a specific individual. Mm-hmm. Where do I start? You speak to them. You ask what they need. You ask how you can help. If you see them on a daily basis, maybe ask them, where do you sleep? Is there anything I can do for you? Do you need some place to sleep? You know, I had to do a lot of research, a lot of online research, and a lot of phone calling to try to find some place that could offer the kind of support David needed.
So if I were to ask you, because we've seen the changes in David,
mm-hmm.
and pretty profound,
mm-hmm.
I think, what would you say, how has this changed you personally, spiritually?
Oh my gosh. Well, I am much more aware of the people around me, and it's interesting I say that, and I still see homeless people every day that I don't speak to. I don't know, there was something about David that, looking back on it, I can say I was called to speak to David,
mm-hmm.
for some reason. And I tell him all the time, God has a plan for you, David. I don't know what it is, but this didn't happen for nothing.
Would you say both sides of the equation got blessed?
Oh, absolutely.
So here you
Beyond
are trying
pleasure.
To help a homeless man because you were compassionate, you felt God's hand on you. And that certainly occurred. He's better off now than he was, probably light years better. But so are you.
Absolutely.
You have changed. I've seen a lot of change in how he's like one of the family almost.
Oh, absolutely.
And you are worried about his trip to California. How's he going to get through the
I looked up TSA medical issues today because he's going to be on a plane tomorrow, and I even called TSA to ask about how he was going to get through security tomorrow. So yes, I'm a little concerned.
Well, I tell you, I am very proud of you and love you so much because you are a wonderful person to those that know you. But now you've reached out to somebody that didn't know you. You've impacted his life. And I would say, I'd reiterate what you said. God has a plan for all our lives. We're all interwoven in a tapestry. And I'm just very proud of you and love you very much. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we close?
Well, I do want to say that thank you for the sweet things that you said about me, but I didn't do anything knowingly. You know, every single thing was one tiny step, one guilty feeling or one nudge or one, you know, I was angry at somebody, and one little thing at a time that became this relationship with me and David. I would love to say, oh, I was so smart, I knew exactly what I was doing, and here's how you can do it too. But that's just not the truth. The truth is, it was one tiny feeling or nudge at a time.
How many people would you say through social media have you met as a result of trying to help David?
Oh, actually met or just communicated
with?
Well,
communicated
with. Well, he's got about 120 followers.
I can't believe that. 120.
120. Yeah, that's not very much for social media.
Well,
but it is just our two little neighborhoods that I sent it out to. So pretty good considering that.
Well, 2 points. One, we also met a couple of other folks at Harmony House.
Oh, yeah.
And we're planning to do some, we've already delivered backpacks and things. But one reached out to us the other day, and I have not responded yet, but I want to. No.
Yeah.
So we have met a couple more that are interested in Sonia helping them with their resume and getting them a job. So thank you for taking this time. Any last comment before we close?
No, I don't think so.
Thank you, Sonia, for taking so much time with us. God bless, and please keep up the good work. Merry Christmas to you and to David. Bye-bye.
It was the night before Christmas. He lived all alone in a one-bedroom house made of plaster and stone. I had come down the chimney with presents to give, to see just who in this dwelling did live. I looked all around, a strange sight to see. No tinsel, no presents, not even a tree. No stockings on the mantel, just boots filled with sand. On the wall hung pictures of far distant lands. Medals and badges, awards of every kind. A sobering thought came alive in my mind. This house was different. It was dark, it was dreary. I had found the home of a soldier. I could see that most clearly. The soldier lay sleeping, silent, alone, curled up on the floor in this one-bedroom home. His face was so gentle, the room in such disorder, not at all how I pictured a United States soldier. Was this the hero of whom I'd just read, curled up on a poncho, the floor for a bed? Then I realized the other families that I saw this night owed their lives to soldiers who were willing to fight. In the morning round the world, children would play. Grown-ups would celebrate a bright Christmas day. But they all enjoy freedom each month of the year because of soldiers like the one lying here. I couldn't help but wonder how many lay alone on a cold Christmas Eve in lands far from home. The very thought brought a tear to my eye. I dropped to my knees and I started to cry. The soldier awakened. I heard his rough voice. Santa, don't cry. This life is my choice. I fight for freedom. I don't ask for more. My life is my God, my country, my core. The soldier rolled over and drifted asleep. But I couldn't control it and I continued to weep. I kept watch for hours, so silent and still, as both of us shivered from the cold night's chill. I didn't want to leave him on that cold, dark night, this guardian of honor, so willing to fight. Then the soldier rolled over with a voice soft and pure. He whispered, "Carry on, Santa. It's Christmas Day. All's secure." One look at my watch, I knew he was right. Merry Christmas, my friend. May God bless you this night.
Thank you for joining us on Ask the Pastor. If you have a question or a comment for the program, just email us at question@askthepastornow.com. We will try to respond to you either by email or answer your question on air during a future broadcast. Again, that email address is question@askthepastornow.com. Now, on behalf of Jim Simmons, Charles Lyons, and the whole Ask the Pastor team, we invite you to explore our website for great resources. You can also hear previous broadcasts as archives at askthepastornow.com. So, until next time, read, study, pray, and prepare for your life of faith and freedom.